This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 832 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israel continues to kill and injure Palestinians across the Gaza Strip, while the Israeli blockade remains firmly in place despite nearly 100 days since the so-called ceasefire was agreed upon in October 2025. On Wednesday, the Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza announced that since the agreement, at least 450 Palestinians have been killed and more than 1,200 have been injured. Also on Wednesday, Hatem Abu Saleh, a nurse, was killed by Israeli occupation forces in Khan Yunis. Reporter Tamer Keshta recorded footage of his family, colleagues, and loved ones grieving over his body, which was taken to the Nasser Medical Complex, where he was a member of the nursing staff. Dr. Mohammed Sakhar, the director of the nursing department where Abu Saleh worked, told TRT World News that Abu Saleh was the target of more than one assassination attempt and had already sustained injuries while on duty inside the hospital complex. He had taken a leave from work to help his family prepare for his son's wedding, but, quote, the occupation's bullets were faster than his chance to attend. Dr. Sakhar added, quote, today we bid farewell to our colleague who never hesitated to serve these afflicted people. The occupation is deliberately targeting medical and nursing staff. We have lost dozens of nurses and doctors in a very short period of time. On Tuesday, January 13th, two Palestinians were killed by Israeli forces in Rafah. The day before, on January 12th, an Israeli quadcopter drone shot and killed three Palestinians in Khan Yunis, identified by the local Wafa news agency as Wissam Abdullah Salem Al-Amur, Mahmoud Subhi Breka, and Atef Samir Al-Bayouk. The attacks came after Israeli army forces carried out airstrikes and shelling across several parts of the enclave on Monday, Al Jazeera noted. Faris Afana, the director of emergency and medical services in Gaza, said this week that Israel continues to violate the ceasefire every single day, leaving civilians under constant fire across Gaza. He reported that four Palestinians were killed on Sunday, January 11th, in Gaza City and other areas, with multiple injuries reported, and that a civilian was shot in the back in Jabalia refugee camp. Afana added that, quote, Israeli occupation snipers are still committing massacres against our Palestinian people. James Elder, the spokesman of the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, who is in Gaza, stated this week while sitting next to the hospital bed of a 9-year-old child that the agency has recorded reports of at least 100 children killed by Israeli attacks and hundreds more wounded during the so-called ceasefire. The child, Abdelrahman, said he was collecting firewood and plastic when an Israeli missile struck the area he was in, sending a 6-millimeter thick piece of shrapnel into his eye. He says, quote, I want to play with my friends in the neighborhood. They play while I cannot.
I want to watch this video. I don't want to film this video. And certainly little Abdelrahman wishes he was at home, safe. More than 100 children have been killed in Gaza since the ceasefire of early October. That's roughly one girl or boy killed every day during a ceasefire. Hundreds, like little Abid al-Rahman, have been wounded. A ceasefire that slows the progress of bombs is progress, but one that still buries Palestinian girls and boys is not enough. This is the moment to turn reduced violence into real safety for children, open full access for aid, dramatically expand medical evacuations, and turn this into the line where the killing of girls and boys in Gaza finally stops.
That was James Elder of UNICEF. Along with deaths and injuries from bombings, drone strikes, and missile attacks, Israel continues to deprive Palestinians of the right to basic shelter and safe housing, while it weaponizes the winter weather as another instrument of death and misery. Journalist Wissam Shabat filmed the effect of the recent high winds on tent shelters across the beach on Tuesday. The United Nations Humanitarian Office stated on Tuesday that hundreds of tents and makeshift shelters were blown away or heavily damaged in brutal wind and rainstorms over the last few days, and that its office has received reports of cases of hypothermia, mainly among children, and people killed as buildings collapse. Reporter Syed Hezbollah filmed a building collapsing in the Sheikh Radwan neighborhood of Gaza City on Wednesday evening. The home fell apart, as he says, quote, due to the poor condition of the infrastructure damaged by the war, as well as the heavy rain and strong winds that has hit the Gaza Strip. Israel has refused to allow in necessary materials for infrastructure repairs and maintenance, as well as heavy equipment to clear the vast piles of rubble. And of course, prefabricated caravans and other shelter materials that remain stockpiled on the other side of the Gaza crossings. On Tuesday, the Palestinian Civil Defense reported that at least three people, including a 15-year-old girl, were killed when a building collapsed in Gaza City. Another person was killed in a separate collapse in the city on the same day, and the health ministry reported that at least one Palestinian died when a building toppled on Wednesday, bringing the number of deaths from such incidents to 25 since the beginning of the winter season. Deaths from hypothermia were also reported across Gaza this week due to Israel's defiance of its obligations to allow in caravans and shelter materials. A one-week-old infant named Mahmoud Al-Aqra was brought to the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir al-Balah on January 10th. Reporter Samer Al-Boji filmed the baby's older brother, who spoke with harrowing grief about how they called the ambulance after feeling the baby's cold leg. The boy says, quote, "We don't have anything but blankets. We wrapped him with the blankets so he could keep warm. We don't have enough blankets or anything. The covers we had were just shawls, and this is what happened to him." A one-year-old baby, also in Deir al-Balah, died in his displaced family's tent on Tuesday, according to medical sources at the hospital. Two other children had died on Monday night due to the freezing conditions and inadequate shelter, Al Jazeera Arabic reported. The Gaza government media office stated on January 13th that since the start of the genocide, at least 24 Palestinians have died from extreme cold in the forced displacement camps, 21 of whom were children. Meanwhile, because of Israel's ongoing blockade and more than 2 years of bombings to most of the infrastructure, municipal workers are warning that destroyed or degraded sewage and water systems across Gaza could create unprecedented health and environmental crises. Our contributor Asim Al-Nabi, reporting beside a reservoir for Al Arabi TV on January 13th, said that, quote, "This is one of the consequences of a long-term catastrophic genocidal war. The basin was originally designed to collect rainwater and recharge the groundwater. Today, it is contaminated with vast amounts of sewage, posing a grave threat to Gaza City's groundwater and creating an environmental crisis that may take years or perhaps decades to resolve." Asim is not only a writer for the Electronic Intifada and a reporter with Al Arabi TV in Gaza, but he is also the spokesperson for the Gaza municipality. The Gaza government media office stated on January 9th that as the Israeli government continues to renege on its obligations under the October 10th agreement, the Gaza Strip is, quote, facing a slow-motion genocide. According to reports, Israel has only allowed in 43% of the minimum agreed upon quantities of humanitarian aid, which has led to a, quote, continued severe shortage of food, medicine, water, and fuel, and has deepened the catastrophic humanitarian crisis in the Gaza Strip. Even the food items that the occupation allows to enter are mostly of low nutritional value, while the occupation prevents the entry of nutritious and essential food items, confirming that the occupation is deliberately pursuing a systematic policy of starvation and deprivation. Furthermore, the media office said, fuel shipments to the Gaza Strip during the same period have only averaged about 5 trucks per day out of the 50 trucks allocated according to the agreement. This represents a compliance rate of approximately 11%, they say, quote, leaving hospitals, bakeries, and water and sanitation facilities in a state of near paralysis and exacerbating the suffering of the civilian population. Turning to the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces stormed the Batan al-Hawa neighborhood of Silwan in East Jerusalem on Wednesday, assaulting and beating residents, firing sound bombs and tear gas, causing damage to people's personal belongings inside their homes, and detaining at least one man, according to the Wafa news agency. The attacks follow recent forced expulsions of Palestinian families from their homes in Silwan, and the imminent expulsion of approximately 24 more families, which are part of a broader effort to expel some 2,200 Palestinians from Silwan, Middle East Eye said. As we reported last week, Israeli forces expelled families from their homes in Silwan and turned the buildings over to an extremist Jewish-Israeli settler organization. Also in East Jerusalem, Israeli forces ordered the month-long closure of a health clinic in the Old City and threatened to cut water and electricity if it reopens and provides care for patients. The Al-Zawiya Clinic, which is the oldest clinic run by UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, has, since 1949, provided essential services including pediatric and maternal care. It serves 30,000 people. The clinic offers family planning services, mental health care, treatment for chronic diseases such as hypertension and diabetes, an emergency department, and dental care, according to Wafa, which notes that family planning, childhood vaccinations, and mental health services are available to both refugees and non-refugees. These moves are part of a wide escalation of attacks by Israel on the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees and the people it serves. Roland Friedrich, the director of UNRWA's affairs in the West Bank, including East Jerusalem, stated on January 13th that, quote, in a disgraceful move, Israeli security personnel forcibly entered the UNRWA Jerusalem Health Center, demanding the removal of UN signage. The Jerusalem Health Center has been supported over decades by member states, many of whom have visited the premises. Later on the same day, a temporary closure order was issued against the health center, closing it for the next 30 days. It may never open again, he said. The developments, he said, quote, follow the December 2025 amendments made to the anti-UNRWA Knesset laws. These shameful tactics are part of the relentless campaign by Israeli authorities to unilaterally prevent UNRWA from executing its UN General Assembly mandate in occupied East Jerusalem, which does not fall under Israeli sovereignty. The application of Israeli law therein is illegal, he said. Israeli forces raided a Palestinian wedding in Jerusalem on January 9th, firing live ammunition and stun grenades at attendees. Several men were arrested, including the groom, with footage showing soldiers inside the hall and security forces throwing stun grenades as guests were forced outside, Al Jazeera reported. In the southern occupied West Bank, Israeli forces shot a 58-year-old man, Shakir Falah al-Jabari, on Saturday, January 10th, as he was inside his vehicle in the eastern part of the city of Al-Khalil, or Hebron. Al-Jabari died from his wounds on Sunday morning, according to reports. The Israeli army said its forces opened fire at a vehicle that accelerated towards soldiers. However, in a later statement, the military acknowledged that an initial review found no evidence that the incident was an intentional attack. Israeli authorities confiscated his body following the shooting, the Wafa news agency reported. The Palestine Red Crescent Society told Al Jazeera that its crew was prevented from reaching the man. The killing came as Israeli forces besieged a house in the old city of Nablus on Sunday, with undercover units infiltrating neighborhoods before military vehicles stormed the city from multiple directions, Al Jazeera noted. Two Palestinians were arrested as troops deployed across several areas and live gunfire echoed through the Eastern Market, according to Palestinian security sources cited by Wafa News Agency. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada this week, but we wanted to highlight Fate of Gaza's Disappeared Remains Unknown by our colleague, the newest addition to our staff, the brilliant reporter, our assistant editor, Khaled Al-Hissi. On October 19th, 2025, Gaza's Ministry of Health announced it had received 150 bodies from Israel, Khaled writes. The corpses were handed over by the International Committee of the Red Cross, and their return followed the ceasefire agreement that came into effect on October 10th, with at least 8,000 people still missing in Gaza, presumed either buried under rubble in mass graves dug by the Israeli military or detained by Israel and held outside Gaza, determining the fate of the missing is a top priority. But as Israel still keeps crossings into Gaza shut to all but the bare minimum of aid, Gaza's authorities are without heavy machinery to shift millions of tons of rubble or relevant scientific materials to properly identify sometimes deeply decomposed corpses. This undermines the effort to provide information to families of the disappeared. It was left to the forensic teams at Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis to examine and document the corpses that were returned in October. The bodies were bound from the hands and ankles and had abrasions and bruises all over, Ahmed Diyar, director of the Forensic Medicine Department in Gaza, said in an October 20th interview with Palestine TV. Some bodies were naked except for their underwear. Others were fully naked, he said. Diyar added that the bodies had all been frozen, preventing the forensic teams from performing autopsies until the tissues thawed after 2 days. Two bodies, he added, had been blindfolded and had constraints around their necks. Others bore signs of physical abuse. Several bodies had gunshot wounds to the head and chest, he said, suggesting that they may have been executed. Some were just skeletons, while others were in an advanced state of decomposition. The Israeli side provided 90 DNA profiles along with the 150 bodies, but no names. Yet the Gaza Strip, as Israel is well aware, lacks equipment and tools for DNA or tissue analysis. We only have a rudimentary procedure relying on the body's length, trying to specify the age, the nutritional status, the presence of personal belongings from the teeth, the bones, previous surgeries or amputations, distinguishing marks on the body like scars or moles in distinctive locations only the family can recognize, Diyar said. Providing DNA profiles is futile as a result, he said. Based on the October so-called ceasefire agreement, Israel was to hand over bodies according to a 15-to-1 ratio, 15 Palestinians for every Israeli. As of January 2026, the Ministry of Health in Gaza had received 345 bodies, from which, so far, only 99 have been identified. Diyar explained the process of identifying these bodies in a video published by Gaza's Ministry of Health on October 14th. Forensic teams examined the bodies to determine the cause of death, how long since death, and the types of injuries suffered. A criminal evidence team then documents and photographs these injuries along with the body's general features and clothing. These photos are uploaded to a website created by the Ministry of Health in Gaza, where people can view the photos to try to identify the corpses. If someone recognizes a body, they head to Nasser Medical Complex to view the photos again. After confirming that it is the right body and that they have a close relationship or are relatives, they are allowed to take the body for burial. If a corpse is not identified, it will be buried in a designated location where every grave is numbered, a mass grave for unidentified martyrs. In case someone later identifies a body from photos, they will know where their loved one was buried. Those are excerpts from Fate of Gaza's Disappeared Remains Unknown by our colleague Khaled Al-Hissi on electronicintifada.net. And now, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Gaza and around the world. In the Sawarha displacement camp in central Gaza, an animal therapy expert brought two rescued puppies to play with children. The Samir Project, a local mutual aid group which supports the camp and its residents, says, quote, "Animals bring happiness and purpose. They do not judge. They love unconditionally. This is so important, particularly at our medical camps, where we rehabilitate those with injuries and care for the sick. Our two new puppies will bring happiness amidst the pain. That's from the Samir Project in Gaza. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.